what's coming at you for this May 30th, 2002 show. We have special guests from Santa Cruz and on the controversy around the mobile home park and the issue of CPS. They're going to be coming up here in the next 2 hours. Stay tuned and stay with us.
Was awoken by a man with a handgun. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got no right to sleep. This morning I was awoken by a man with a handgun. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got no right to be. Who owns the land?
Who owns the land?
Who owns the land? There's a connection. Who owns the land? To my daily eviction. Who owns the land? And the extermination. Who owns the land? Of the Native American. Who owns the land? Won't someone please tell me? Who owns the land? 'Cause I am just a white man. Who owns the land? I live in the Americas. Who owns the land? How did I get here? For only one reason, my presence raises a question. Who owns the land? The homeless are a problem. For only one reason, your presence raises a question. Who owns the land? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home?
And that was, of course, 15, Land from Houseless USA, a special collection made by our very own Free Radio Tech Whizzes here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, which is what you're tuned to, 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrobe Spear's Broadsides, and of course I'm also a Bathrobe Spear. If you are lucky enough to catch a glimpse of me in my tattered but the proud bathrobe, as I occasionally wander the streets in protests trying to find places for homeless people to sleep without being arrested, that's of course not on the city council's agenda, but it is on the agenda of a lot of the local Santa Cruz community to eliminate this stain from the human rights, well, the record of human rights abuses that's happening. It's actually the sort of the standard process that Santa Cruz continues to go through, criminalizing homeless people every night under 6.36010A, the sleeping ban section of the camping ordinance. And of course, there are no legal campgrounds in Santa Cruz, so there actually are no legal places to camp and no legal places to sleep other than on private property with the permission of the owner in those situations where people are lucky enough to find shelter in a backyard or side yard or actually front yard fenced in from the street. You can also be in a vehicle legally 3 days out of the 30-day month, 3 nights out of the 30-day month. Thanks to Fitzmaurice, the right to sleep in your vehicle with the permission of the owner and the renter was cut back to 3 nights per month total. That was his doing way back in 1999 when some small liberalizations of the sleeping ban law, which so impacts homeless people, 1,000 to 2,000 of them in Santa Cruz, happened because Mayor Catherine Byers at that time refused to consider more fundamental and important changes mandated by the electorate in the 1998 elections, namely eliminating the sleeping ban completely so that sleeping per se does not become a crime. Littering, creating problems such as disturbing the peace, assault, dumping on the streets, all kinds of other things would be crimes, but just sleeping would not per se be a crime, and of course cannot really be a crime in any meaningful sense unless you're considering you're under a criminal government, unless there are legal places for people to go, shelter spaces, and there are not. And of course that's why we have, in essence, a criminal government in Santa Cruz, in so much as the police enforce laws that regularly, methodically, systematically, and explicitly violate the human rights of poor people who need to be able to sleep at night and have no legal places to go. Tonight at the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Emergency Program, there will be less than 40 spaces for 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people. Really, that kind of closes the case. There's really not much more to be argued after that, though you will hear endless jabber about how it's going to produce a magnet effect if people are allowed to sleep, how there's a much more kind of a wink and a nod to the police department is sufficient, that the police don't really harass homeless people, that those who camp lightly on the land are not bothered, etc., etc., etc. In fact, there's an increasing campaign, an escalating campaign of harassment against poor people, homeless people, young people. You see it particularly downtown. You see it orchestrated by the Sentinel and coincidentally becoming into power, coming into its force, particularly as the police budget and the whole city budget comes up for discussion. It looks like budget cuts are being considered everywhere. The police department is pushing to have no budget cuts while the social services will get massive budget cuts. And of course, the police department should be getting the budget cuts. They're the ones who get these huge cost overruns just winked at by the council, $13 million for a $6 or $7 million police station. And the city manager doesn't even take responsibility for that kind of outrageous cost overrun and also creating a police department when, in fact, you haven't even got shelter for poor people in Santa Cruz, where you haven't even got ADUs, accessory dwelling units, decriminalized so that the tenants who are sort of huddling in those units can get some basic rights as tenants and not have to worry about their units being eliminated or the landlords kicking them out without any kind of recourse. There's no just eviction law in Santa Cruz. There's no rent control law for the majority, and the council is even talking about eliminating rent control for mobile home parks. And we're going to be discussing that today with Jeff Mick, one of our guests from Clearview Court, one of the three mobile home parks in the Santa Cruz city limits, actually one of the two that is not owned by the tenants and the coach owners themselves. They, in essence, are renting from another owner. And there's a considerable controversy both in Clearview Court and considerable concern as well as in De Anza that the city council, at least in De Anza, is going to be selling out the tenants and revoking rent control, which has been in effect since the early 90s in the De Anza and Clearview Court that allows that requires that rents be kept, they be advanced no further than improvements done by the owners required to be refunded for the cost of living, and also have to be subject to other things like a reasonable regulation as well. But there's, in essence, there's the rent control that all of us deserve. Currently, only mobile homes have, and we're going to be talking about that with Jeff Mick. We also have in the studio with us Chai Lewis, whose infant daughter was stolen from her by CPS, I think one or two days after she was born. It's an incredible situation, and she's going to be talking about it on the air today and appealing for support from the community, discussing that whole situation. CPS is a sore point with a lot of folks in the community. If you've had problems with CPS, I'd like to hear your thoughts on that issue, too. What I'm going to begin with to get it out of the way, however, is my very own situation, and I think that's not just mine. It's a situation of folks at Santa Cruz City Council who want to go to speak before, supposedly, our city's legislative body, the body that makes the laws, that listens to the grievances of the community, that tries to sit down and counsel and discussion and come to some reasonable conclusions, so the 51,500 of us, or is it more now, anyway, the more than 50,000 of us here in Santa Cruz can work out the problems we need to work out. In fact, of course, the council is a far cry from that, and particularly on issues like civil rights for the homeless, it has doggedly refused to address those issues on its agenda literally for decades, but more relevantly in the last 4 years when the current so-called progressive or ultra-progressive or whatever the label was, they came in under City Council under Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar, and then you had Porter and Riley also adding to this to make a supermajority, and Kennedy and Premack kind of occasionally throwing in the wild card. You don't have, not only do you have these council members not dealing with outstanding issues of civil rights for the homeless, you have them criminalizing, excluding, and harassing members of the public who try to raise these issues. So a lawsuit I filed recently contends that the city council meetings had unpopular speakers who were cut off with less time than other speakers, interrupted as they spoke, threatened with removal from the meeting, taken into custody at meetings or during a recess, ordered out of the room, barred from subsequent council meetings, input by the public was cut back, public comment periods on agenda items which are required by law were skipped over and ignored until members of the public made valiant efforts to bring it to the attention of council members at the risk of being excluded or threatened. Time was cut away from speakers by interruptions from council members who refused then to return that time to the speakers from whom it was taken. Favored bureaucrats and constituents were given extra time to speak. Speakers were told they couldn't use certain words like Führer and flunky. Speakers were told they couldn't use council members' names. Speakers were interrupted and told they should address only the city council instead of the entire community. Speakers were told they could not use props or present documents. Speakers were told they could not talk about an item during the oral communications period for general items because the item was on the agenda, and then when they tried to talk about that item when it came up on the agenda, they were told they couldn't talk about it then either. They were told to take down signs. They were threatened for placing a tape recorder at the public podium. And I'm referring to a lot of things that have happened to me as an individual, but also have happened to other speakers. Speakers were referred to critically by city council members by name and then refused a right of reply. Members of the audience were told they could not boo or applaud. Individuals were threatened for making silent gestures from the audience. This, of course, is the kind of key element of the most recent lawsuit. On March 12th, I made a "You're a bunch of fascists" salute from the audience. It lasted about 3 seconds. If you look at the video, and you can go to that video, and I'll give you the address for that video in a moment if you grab a pencil. But I was arrested for that. I was taken out of council. I was held 5 hours. I was arrested for disrupting a public meeting when the mayor didn't even notice what I'd done until a council member, Fitzmaurice, disrupted the meeting himself. And to observe the whole video of this incident, go to the website www.santacruz, that's one word, small letters, santacruz.indymedia, indymedia.org. That's www.santacruz.indymedia.org, and you'll find a whole bunch of interesting stories about local Santa Cruz events that you won't read about in the Santa Cruz Sentinel, and my story is there too, and it's actually on videotape, so you can see the actual crime for which the city is now spending tens of thousands of dollars, or at least thousands of dollars, and probably will be spending tens of thousands before it's over, to defend themselves in court. And we had hoped, I had hoped anyway, and others too, who are sort of joining in solidarity with this lawsuit in federal court, the first time the city council has been taken to federal court on this kind of First Amendment issue that I know about, we had hoped that the very fact that this lawsuit was filed 2 weeks after the incident occurred where I was arrested for raising my arm in this stop being a fascist gesture to the city council on March 26th when I filed the lawsuit, we'd hoped that the filing would cause the council to back off, to realize they are going to be held accountable for what they're doing. And it seemed perhaps that they might have started to do that because other people at that meeting made the same salute to the council, which indicates stop acting like fascists, and they were not arrested. They were not chastised. They were not told to leave the chambers. And one individual who they told to leave the chambers for another reason, because he served the lawsuit on the council, they didn't want to get the lawsuit either, they did not follow up on their threats, and the man refused to leave the chambers, and they in essence, allowed the individual, as they should have, to continue his participation in the public assembly, even though they were offended that he was calling them into federal court for their First Amendment violations. That was James Ney, who was serving a lawsuit on my behalf. However, recently, I was at a city council meeting on Tuesday, and under the leadership of council member Tim Fitzmaurice and Scott Kennedy, the crackdown has intensified. And I'm going to play you a little bit from the afternoon session so you can hear exactly how that's been coming down. The consent agenda is the agenda in the afternoon. There are usually two sessions of the council, afternoon, 3 o'clock, evening starts at 7 o'clock. 7 o'clock has the laws and ordinance changes, usually in the public hearings. And supposedly the more pro forma stuff, the stuff that everyone kind of agrees on but just has to be voted on by the council as a matter of course, supposed to go on the afternoon agenda. So the afternoon agenda has the consent agenda, which means there's about 18, 20 items are all lined up one after another, which are voted on in a mass by the council, unless a member of the public or the council asks to pull an item from the consent agenda so it can be discussed individually. Well, I customarily do this with three or four items, and I did this with an item which will probably be kind of familiar with those of you who are following the downtown controversy, hearing the smears of Dan White of the Santa Cruz Sentinel against poor people downtown as a bunch of grubby, violent, vicious, spitting, brutal, unsafe, unsavory individuals. Now, the whole kind of bigoted picture that justified the council's putting in this fence at Yuppie Planter, as I call it, in front of New Leaf Market. That's the green fence that walls off two-thirds of the sidewalk on behalf of two private merchants, the Sushi Now Cafe owners and the Alibaba's Cafe owners. Now, the issue on the agenda was a transfer of the lease from Alibaba's Cafe to the current, I guess no longer the current owner, Ali Ka, although it may not have been formally concluded. I think they gave them authorization to proceed to another owner who's also, I believe, individual with a, I think it's a Persian name. He's a fellow from Iran, but that's neither here nor there. The ownership of the cafe is being changed, and several of us wanted to speak about that issue because the lease, which was granted this cafe, suddenly seemed to include a huge expanse of previously public property. And it's not being used. If you go down there and look at front of the New Leaf Cafe during the day, you won't see many people sitting in those chairs. And if anybody who is not a customer or who is not a friend of those two owners tries to sit there, they are not only subject to, but frequently are automatically told to move along or face arrest. This is in an area that was previously public space, and it's one of the few public space areas along the mall of that kind. There are like three large planters along the mall where it's actually legal to sit on the lip of the planter. If you try to sit on the lip of the small planters that are downtown, particularly in the last couple of weeks, you'll find you'll get a ticket. You'll get a citation. I'm not sure if it's $80 or it's as much as $162, but it's a significant amount of money for just resting your butt. And this is in an area where benches are being regularly removed, where more than half the benches on the mall, originally placed by the Vision Santa Cruz plan, the rebuilding plan after the earthquake, have been removed. a fact that you will not find in Dan White's sentinel smears, a fact that you will not find discussed in the Santa Cruz City Council. So we were going to bring up some of these issues at the lease renewal. And the issue, of course, is can we talk about it? I mean, why not? Well, some would say that's off topic. I mean, we're talking about whether this man's lease should be renewed. But I would say no. If I wish to make an argument that the lease should be held up, I do so saying, look, given the current lease situation that cuts off two-thirds of the sidewalk, that has produced great resentment among the homeless and poor community, that sets a bad precedent and actually generates a lot of resentment against merchants, I think this lease should be held up for a reconsideration of the whole situation. And to me, that's a perfectly legitimate argument to make. I was not allowed to make that argument, and another speaker, Ed Davidson, was not allowed to make that argument. We're now going to play somewhat inferior quality recording, but I think you'll be able to hear what goes on. You'll hear council members interrupting and insisting we stop in a fashion that I find amazing in their determination to avoid a public discussion of issues and to show how powerful and punitive they can be towards critics that they don't want to talk. This is from the Santa Cruz City Council meeting, the afternoon session on May 28th. And I'm going to scrambling right now for the tape here, which I have here. I just have to find the exact tape. It was also an interesting session for a number of other reasons, because the evening session had oral communications on it. This is where we are. Here, we got this tape. We'll go into this, and then we'll talk about other issues at the council.
Mayor Kearns, Pacific Avenue, known as the Ali Baba Cafe.
Is it Ed Davidson?
Yes, good afternoon.
Three minutes.
Mayor and Council. Thank you. As you may or may not recall, I have questioned some of the problems that you have downtown that don't seem to have solutions for. Perhaps one of the things that you haven't reckoned in your problems is that you have violated your own policy for how you're going to deal with the sidewalk and streetscape in the downtown on Pacific Avenue in your downtown recovery plan. Among the things were that the kiosks were intended to sell items and to sell takeaway food and not be in competition with the private restaurants along Pacific Avenue. And they were to be modeled on the Santa Monica kiosks on 4th Street, Santa Monica, which was the design concept for Pacific Avenue. Now, in that block, you have established permanent wrought iron sidewalk seating areas, extensions as they were called, which were supposed to be removable at night. Now you're making a sit-down situation for the kiosk number 4.
Sure, I'd like to raise a point of order.
Councilmember Kennedy interrupts.
Mr. Davidson, comes to germane to the issue before us, which is a simple transfer of the lease. We're not discussing the nature of the retail space or the extension to a cafe seating area or anything.
Aren't you talking about the cost of the rents?
No, we are just only talking about transferral of one lease to one party to another party of the kiosk on Pacific Avenue. So it would have to be a different agenda item if you wanted to open up the whole thing to talk about what kind of business is being done.
And that's the voice of Mayor Crone supporting Councilmember Kennedy's point. However, if you look at the staff report, you see the lease is discussed, the rents are discussed, the terms of the lease are mentioned, and the returns to the city in terms of the profit and so forth is also discussed. So it seems that either the council members have not read the staff report, and I wouldn't be surprised, Or they don't care that it's mentioned in the staff report. Their major concern seems to be stopping critics from talking about this issue at all. And this is what they try to do.
It's my understanding that the city manager is to execute a lease agreement to whoever. And in that lease agreement, I suspect that there is something about rents. And the rents should reflect the fact that...
The rent reflects the second element. First element is transferring the lease from one party to the second, and other non-substantive amendments. So, though your comments may be non-substantive, it's not appropriate for this comment, because we're not discussing any substantive issues related to the lease.
We can't really change the rent right now because the lease is already in effect.
And while it's true they could not change the rents, they could stop the lease to reconsider the whole thing during that period of time. And they are denying the public the right to raise these issues at all. And this also was raised in a letter from Thomas Levitt to Mayor Crone demanding a response, and Mayor Crone has not yet responded to that letter as far as I know, which was recently sent. It was sent yesterday. This discussion continues.
For some reason, you don't think we should transfer it.
Definitely, you can put it to go on with St. Barbara being the leasee rather than the current leasee. Thank you.
No, I don't.
And you hear Kennedy cutting off Ed Davidson. Thank you. Move approval of the item even before the second speaker, who was myself, had a chance to get to the mic, though I was obviously speaking, and I turned in a card to speak on that issue. Exactly what I was talking about in the lawsuit, a complete contempt for the public process and as well as the state Brown Act law, which requires public comment on these items. You'll later see Councilmember Kennedy attempt to turn the Brown Act on its head and claim that they can't allow us to talk about an item because it's not being discussed and it hasn't been properly noticed, and they would be violating the law if they let us talk about it. In fact, the Brown Act does not, as far as I know, apply to the public. It applies to the members of the City Council, so we can talk about whatever we want to talk about if it's relevant to the item under discussion. And of course, the conversations of the City Council are far-flung and ranging and go on endlessly. All this is being done to stop 3 minutes of testimony from myself and 3 minutes of testimony from Ed Davidson.
I think there was someone else who wanted to speak.
And what happened here was Mr. Davidson wasn't able to finish what he was trying to say because Councilmember Kennedy cut him off, and Mr. Davidson could only think, oh gosh, there's another speaker who wants to speak. This kind of intimidation, of course, stops the public from presenting information that is of public importance or maybe of public importance to the community. And this is, of course, being televised at the same time. So it's not just a council that has closed its ears to the issue that hears, but it's the entire community that happens to be listening on the community television station.
I accept the issue. As you said, that was my concern, was whether the rent is appropriate.
Well, Speaker, item number 13, you can see the
I regret that the council seems to be trying to muzzle the discussion on this issue because...
So after about 9 words, I got cut off. Here we go.
For the public's benefit, we're watching on television. We're not muzzling any discussion, but if we're going to open up a discussion to a broader series of issues, we ought to at least invite the people who are concerned with those issues and inform them that those issues are going to be under discussion. It's only proper that we stay germane to the issues that are presented to us, unless we're going to open this up for broader public debate.
Notice that Mr. Fitzmaurice is not making a point of order of any sort. He's simply interrupting me to talk to the public. He could do this on his own time, but instead he's using it to stop me from speaking, which of course is one of the things he's been doing repeatedly throughout this last 3 years on the city council, and that has become the focus of this lawsuit, because if you are constantly in fear of interruptions from a council member and potential threats of arrest unless you shut up and sit down, you will end up, unless you are a glutton for punishment like some of us are, just not even attending these meetings.
If somebody wants to come here and call names or wants to make claims or make arguments to people who are not here to defend themselves, it's completely inappropriate, and that's why we try to stay on the agenda item as it has been announced.
And of course, no one has mentioned anybody's name in this matter. Fitzmaurice, of course, is concerned that we will mention names, but no one has. And of course, he's taking up my time as I attempt to speak.
I just want to add to Mr. Fitzmaurice's comments, it's not only inappropriate, not germane, but it's actually illegal according to the terms of the violence. Public meeting law, we cannot have that discussion. Violence are not properly noticed. Mm-hmm. This says specifically it's a transfer of lease and non-substantive change.
May I continue?
That's the definition of non-substantive. We don't have to allow non-substantive comments on points that aren't part of these actions.
It would be nice to be allowed to make my comments before they're ruled non-substantive, but I hear what you're saying, and I'm trying to address myself to this issue, which I read before the council meeting, as you all did, I'm sure. I believe Mr. Davison's comments were substantive, because mentioned in the specifics of the background and discussion of this item, the rent, the terms of rent, the hours of operation are mentioned, and these considerations do come into play if Mr. Davison was discussing whether the lease should be transferred. The question is whether the terms of the lease are going to be kept to, whether the terms are good, whether the lease should be perhaps withheld for a period of time to consider such things. I resent being interrupted. I'm trying to speak.
Your comments should be noted, but you should understand that because something is connectable to an issue doesn't mean that it's under discussion in an issue. And the idea that somehow we can just bring anything that might be in the particular report into the discussion is completely inappropriate. And the point of order is you've already decided on Mr. Davidson. This is not up for discussion, a continued discussion on whether Mr. Davidson's comments were appropriate or not. That's not part of what we're discussing right now. We should be discussing the item on the agenda.
So any discussion, any comments that the council is acting inappropriately in the Davidson matter are also to be censored. And what Councilmember Fitzmaurice is saying here is that you cannot refer to matters in the staff report, the very report paid for out of public monies for this particular agenda item, published right before the council meeting, to inform the community and the council about the item. That cannot be discussed. That's not germane to the item, which has to be quite an unusual position to take.
I'm referring to the discussion in the staff report's agenda item, not unrelated items. And the reason I refer to Mr. Davidson is because I intend to cover some subjects he was covering that got, shall we say, interrupted and censored by council members. I want to be able to make a two-minute presentation, and then I'll go and you folks can do what you want. I mean, it seems to me that's only fair and under these circumstances. So I'm going to attempt to do that. You are considering transferring a lease, and I think there should be a realistic assessment of the situation in terms of where these businesses are placed in terms of the transfer of this lease. You are in a situation that's a highly controversial one downtown. Mr. Davidson has pointed out that fences have been raised there, and I know that...
Mr. Mayor, I don't think the city attorney, if the council at this time is discussing the terms of the lease, if you're discussing the location of the kiosk, that's not before you. That land use decision was made years ago. The only question you're discussing is under the lease, there's a provision that says, with the city's permission, a lease may be assigned from the present lessee to a prospective lessee. And you are being asked for that permission. That's the only issue.
And the current lease, as I understand it, extends to 2008.
That's correct.
Correct. So I would support whatever the corporate action supporting the mayor and enforcing the ground act in terms of what support the council today.
I'm trying to discuss whether the council should approve this lease transfer, which I believe, if I'm not mistaken, is the issue that you're going to be voting on as soon as I finish speaking. And in order to properly consider that, you have to consider what is happening down there in the situation that everyone is confronted with in front of New Leaf Market. And that is relevant to this discussion. For me to have to spend my time arguing with council members about this rather than simply getting the 2 minutes of conversation that I'm entitled seems to me to be highly unfair and a violation of the Brown Act, I might add.
Alerting and motioning, companies want to cut off the debate on this issue, then we can move on to the next
item. Brown calls for a motion to cut off the
debate. I think that is good. Or we can let Mr. North finish his 3 minutes.
My view is that Mr. North wants to speak directly to the point that Mr. Plaza would potentially, you know, would in any way, that trend could in any way affect the operation of the kiosk because of the issues that's hot. All the other things are irrelevant. Do you have reason to believe Mr. Plaza would organize his or run his business differently than they currently see?
The considerations that I would like to bring to the council have to do with whether I know, but I'm not. I don't think I'm obligated to respond to an interrogation from the council. This is my time to present 1 minute's worth of testimony.
Let's be moved and seconded.
I would like to raise a point of order.
And now we see Ed Davidson coming to the mic to try to raise a point of order. And of course, well, here's what happens.
I would like to raise a point of order. I would like to raise a point of order.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none, I'm going to...
I would like to raise a point of order.
Number 15.
I would like to raise a point of order.
I'd like to point out that no member of the audience has the authority to raise a point of order during the city council meeting. Only council members do. You can then get a second or third warning if you prefer. You cannot raise points of order.
Is that under Robert's rules?
That's according to the protocols of the city council.
Are we talking Robert's rules, or are we talking what you're working under, or are you talking about your own rules?
It's not debatable. We're going to move on to item number 15.
Point of order.
So Mr. Davidson is told that he's not allowed to make a point of order because only city council members can make a point of order. And then he is told, when he asks, where is that in the Robert's Rules of Order? Are you using Robert's Rules of Order? What are you using? Mayor Cron says, it's not debatable. We will move on. Some people have asked why I'm suing the Santa Cruz City Council in federal court.
I'd just like to confirm with the city attorney that oral communications in our evening session is the time for members of the public to address the council on items that are not on the agenda.
Correct. Item 15 is Laguna Creek Pipeline Access Road.
And in essence, there was not one dissenting voice on that Santa Cruz City Council that stopped the process of stopping two members of the audience from 3 minutes each of discussion of the issue of whether transferring this lease, which essentially has caused a lot of resentment, which is blocking off the sidewalk, which is really the flagship in the attempt to move along poor and homeless people downtown, the wedge, sort of the camel's nose in the tent, or the most visible aspect of what we see as a sort of ethnic and social and economic cleansing downtown, this is not to be discussable, even when it's on the agenda. Most of the time, none of this stuff is discussable because they won't put it on the agenda, but when it appears on the agenda as a relevant consideration to another item, they still won't allow it to be discussed, and they will shut you down if you try to talk about it. And the only way this can be remedied, I believe, is either by having great numbers of people at City Council and demanding it, in essence letting the City Council know that they have to respond to this matter because there's so much public opinion, or taking it to court. So, kind of one thing or the other. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm Robert Norse. And we're in the middle of a fine two-hour show, and I hope you stay with us on this show. We're going to be covering two important issues in some detail, the issue of Clearview Court with guest Jeff Mick, and we're also going to be covering some latest, a very controversial confiscation of a child by CPS, and we'll have Chaya Lewis talking about that issue soon. While we're figuring out the order as to who comes first, Let's listen to a little more at the City Council from Tuesday.
And specifications, authorization, that type of thing, and award the contract.
Mr. Cooker, there's a little paucity of information here in the staff report. First of all,
raises the question, who owns the land? The homeless are a problem for only one reason. Our president raises the question, who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be 90 million dead Indians? Who owns the land? Could it be 6 million Jews? Who owns the land? Is there a connection? Who owns the land? To our imperialism? Who owns the land? Won't someone please tell me? Who owns the land? I am just a white man. Who owns the land? I live in the Americas. Who owns the land? This morning, I was awoken by a man with a handgun. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got no right to sleep.
And in case you want to call in on any of the items you're hearing here on this show, it's 427-3772, 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. We do have a line open, so you're invited to call in. We're going to turn now to our first guest, Jeff Mick. Jeff, how you doing?
Fine.
And say a little something for us. Let's get a voice level here.
Well, it was a nice day today. Weather was cooperative, no rain.
And we have a cooperative, looks like, microphone as well.
Good.
So you're a resident of Clearview Court. What is Clearview Court?
Clearview Court is a mobile home park situated across the street from the West Coast Santa Cruz Hotel, previously the Dream Inn.
Mm-hmm. And how long has Clearview Court been there, as far as you know?
I'm thinking the 30s or 40s, at least the 40s. When I first moved in, my coach was a 52. I had a 1952 coach when I first moved in there.
When did you first move in?
Late 85 or early 86.
And was the how many was it rent controlled in that at that period of time? Or?
No, it was not.
And so what that meant that if the landlord could just raise the rents whenever he wanted. I mean, I know you own your own coaches, right? But you have to pay for the space. And was the rent rising at that point?
Not at the beginning. You know, it wasn't real. Rent wasn't really too much of an issue then. It is now, though, as you can attest by the looking into classifieds.
Right. So it wasn't rent controlled, and yet I guess in the early 90s, rent control came to Clearview Court.
That is correct.
And how did that happen?
Well, it happened primarily. A gentleman named Ron Parker researched it, and I don't know how the law was, passed, but it was he really campaigned for the park to go rent control, and most of the residents did at that time. There weren't very many of us at that time that were, resident that owned our own mobile homes because of the hotel had originally wanted to take over the land and make a conference center out of it. And, through all the legal hurdles and such, they found out that that couldn't occur because it's a state law, the state mandates the mobile home park, and you'd be displacing residents, and they would have relocated us down here at Chestnut and Laurel Street, but the city already had that land allocated for low-income housing.
Chestnut and Laurel. So you got rent control, and did that mean, had rents you said hadn't been rising much anyway, but you decided you needed rent control in the early 90s?
Yeah, sure, because the writing was on the wall that they were going to just raise the rents up to drive everybody out. And it was there. It's a good safety net, and if it isn't abused, by the renters, then it's a really good thing.
How many people live in this park?
There's 66 now.
66 residents or 66 coaches?
There's 66 coaches. There's more residents than that. I just say 66 spots.
And how big is it? Like an acre or two? Or
actually, the whole the occupied land is about 4 acres, and the park overall is 5 acres.
And you have to have, it has to be at least 5 acres, right, for it to be protected under rent control, something to that effect? Is that accurate? We're actually going to be hearing later in this program an analysis of the issue of some of these issues by AHA advocate. That's affordable housing advocate, AHA, Paul Wagner. So that's, I think, what I heard in the course of some of his discussion. You know if that's true, or you
don't? I'm not sure. I was just still thinking on the park being 4 acres, 5 acres. That's actually that's kind of arbitrary. They could change that.
Now, what about the owner? Has it been the same owner since you've been there for 16 years, you say?
Yes.
And you've been in Santa Cruz since?
1965.
1965. So you're not some sort of grubby homeless guy who zipped in, bought a space by the ocean, is now trying to keep it from all the more civilized, better healed folks from, you know, who are trying to and improve the quality of the life here in our town. You actually are an old-time resident who's simply trying to continue living in your home, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's expensive to own a house, and there's a lot of maintenance involved, and I thought early on I was either going to live in an RV or a mobile home, and I chose a mobile home from pressure from my family saying, you know, you wouldn't get along very well in a mobile home, an RV, and they're right. You know, I it's more of a home, and the park has been upgraded. It's, you know, it's a home to me.
So what I'm looking actually at the there have been several articles in the Sentinel, one from the 20th called Rent Control Under Siege, both of these by writer Heather Berner. And another one more recently, actually this one was yesterday, Residents Won't Buy Mobile Home Park. I guess there are a couple issues here involved. You know, has the owner been, who's the owner of this whole situation?
It's Albert Vieira, Drywall Enterprises. Albert Vieira Enterprises.
And he's a long-term owner?
No, previously we were owned by the Dream Inn, who is now the West Coast Santa Cruz Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And they are in the hotel business, and they didn't want anything to do with the mobile home park, so it was sold off to Albert Vieira.
Now, according to this article from the 20th in the Sentinel, there's been an attack on mobile home rent control laws. It says here that there's been a deluge of rent control repeal cases in the state courts since a judge in Hawaii overturned a similar law there. At least a dozen cities have faced such challenges. Most recently, Cotati in Sonoma County, where a judge overturned the city's rent control law. Locally, the Capitola case will be back before a judge next month. Watsonville officials won a suit that tried to overturn the city's rent control ordinance last year. And the Santa Cruz City Council will sit down with owners of the West Side's De Anza Mobile Estates, which is the other non-tenant-owned mobile home park in Santa Cruz, to consider, the council's going to sit down considering a compromise that could loosen the city's rent control ordinance. Are you concerned also at Clear Lake, or at Clearview Court, I'm sorry, I should say, about the possibilities of, is your rent control law being threatened as well?
Rent control is definitely on the ropes, and we fall into the same category as De Anza, being only two of three mobile home parks in Santa Cruz city limits that are under rent control, the other being El Rio, the third party that is a resident-owned park, so they don't really count. And, you know, if you buy in your own park, you don't have to have rent. I mean, you can't be on rent control, right?
Right. Well, you own your own city. You're controlling it from yourself. But what about this it's mentioning that the Danzig is going up for negotiations. Are you concerned that if the Dianza, they decide to dump Dianza rent control, they would also affect you?
Oh, it would definitely would. It's the same ordinance. So we are right there in the same step as they are. And there's arguments, from the corporation that owns Dianza that rent control was violated. And they're challenging the city of Santa Cruz because I think they feel they're not getting a fair business. They're not entitled to their fair profit.
You mean the owners of the parks? You're talking about the owners?
Yes. They're out of Chicago, I believe.
Well, we have this, according to this article again, Peter Underhill, consultant for the Chicago-based Manufactured Homes Communities, which owns Dianza, doesn't see itself as the enemy, told an audience about 150 Santa Cruz Mobile Home Park residents at a recent council meeting. The city's rent control ordinance doesn't do what the city wants it to, provide affordable housing. He pointed to the $500,000 price tag for which one recent mobile home in Dianza sold last year. Cost of housing is determined by the marketplace, he said, between the cost of a mortgage and rent. Some people are paying $2,300 a month now. That's not affordable. What is all this gobbledygook? I'm not quite sure I understand. He's claiming that without rent control, your homes would become more affordable. What is this?
They wouldn't become more affordable. You would just be able to sell it on the higher market. I mean, you'd be able to sell it for what the market would bear. You know, right now, if I were to sell my mobile home park, my mobile home, I'd be able to sell it for $56,000, right? But a lady right across the street from myself who has the same size mobile home, maybe a few years newer, she sold hers for $100,000. So to me, if I'm selling my home and I'm going to live in the park, I'm going to try to sell to somebody that, you know, is a friend or somebody I know, you know, and I'm giving them a good deal.
So are you actually prevented from selling your home for more than the $56,000 you mentioned by the rent control law?
Yeah, and
it not only prohibits the space owner from raising your rents, it prohibits you from selling?
It prohibits me from selling it for a full profit. You understand? It kind of helps. It's kind of a one hand washing the other. Rent control protects the renter, you know, myself owning the home, and also protects a prospective buyer that, you know, is, you know, on a limited income from having to pay shell out full market, you know, for full market.
So in essence, you are kind of taking a loss even now, and you prefer things the way they are, even though you can't sell your home for as much as the woman across the street could sell her home for. You prefer that situation because it enables you to continue living, you know, on the same kind of a rental for the space, right?
Yeah, and see, what will happen is the next person that comes around and buys her house may have to pay a much higher rent. But in my case, they don't have to, you know. They're going to go for rent control. But a person that goes and takes her home over and goes for rent control will have to take a loss in order to get on rent control. So it protects it just keeps everything down in the low roar. It's kind of ridiculous, the cost of housing in Santa Cruz. It really is.
Oh, it's apparently the least affordable market in the nation, or was at least several months ago, according to some national realtors organization.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah. I ran into you and I guess some other folks. You had at least 30 or 35 of the residents from Clearview Court at the city council meeting two nights ago, and also I guess 2 weeks before that. What were you trying to get at that city council meeting?
Well, realizing that rent control's on the ropes, we're trying to work out a deal with the new owner. He hasn't taken it over yet. He's buying it from Albert Vieira. His name's Corbett Wright. And we're trying to work out a deal with him that he could have the amenities, you know, that would be an acre of our land that belongs to the mobile home park, have the Lynch House up front, which is right on West Cliff Drive, Ocean View, by the way, and be able to put 9 condominiums and take over the upper stories of a laundry room for 2 units to fulfill his 10% housing obligation to the city. Okay. And we would try to purchase the park.
We have on the line with us a caller. Hey, caller.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
What was your guest name?
My guest name is Jeff Mick.
Okay, that's what I thought, Jeff. How do you feel about the phenomena that is in Santa Cruz, and I've seen it in a number of cases with people I've been acquainted with in Santa Cruz. It seems that once landlords are figuring out that they can rent to large groups of college students or multiple unit housing, and then keep the rates really high for the rent. And then there's been this phenomena of one person lived in a house longer, it rotated through quite a few groups, but he had stayed pretty constant. When the landlord started fixing, one week, the landlord just mysteriously started fixing up the place. And, of course, right after he had done a little plumbing and a little cosmetics, pop, the rent went up. And, okay, no problem, we'll pay a little extra for a nicer place.
Well, you understand, caller, that...
Now!
Caller,
you
understand that the mobile homes are rent-controlled. That they can't do that with those mobile homes unless the city council pulls the rent control law out.
I'm not making a case for your guest.
Uh-huh.
I think that is as the last frontier, or as the last stronghold, is going to be the trailer park. I'd like to see these landlords that are doing this this practice of fixing up a place, raising the rent, and then a month or two later, just, you know, or the next year, they raise it again and they move in. They kick out everybody and say they want to move in because over in Silicon Valley got a little too tight for them or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been seeing that, so I do believe I'd really like to see somebody fighting for that, because that's the last frontier. That's it right there. The trailer parks.
I hear you. And I mean, it's been said not just the trailer parks, but even RVs are the only affordable housing for poor people these days in Santa Cruz. You want to take your answer on the air, off the air?
I'll take it off the air.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, caller. What are your thoughts on that, Joe?
Well, that definitely happens. I mean, they'll come around, and that's part of the rent control agreement, actually, as well. If you make improvements on your place, you're allowed to sell your place. You know, they give you a limitation on what you can sell your place for if you're on rent control. You know, it's calculated by the city planning department, you know, in Santa Cruz, and there's a formula they go by every year. You're allowed to raise the price of your home that you're able to sell, and if you make improvements on it, you're allowed to add that in there. And of course, if nobody's really watching you, you can kind of, you know, if you're not a completely honest individual, you could kind of spike it a little bit.
Well, it's considerably, of course, more license. I mean, there's endlessly more license for folks who don't who have normal, you know, housing, who own housing in Santa Cruz, because they're not under rent control, and they can just, you know, kick you out with a month's notice, not even requiring any kind of reason. They can just say, sorry, that's it for you, bye-bye, unless you're on some kind of a long-term lease. So they don't even have to show that they are making improvements. I mean, unlike, you know, the owners of your park who have to show that they, you know, they're putting in improvements or the cost of living has gone up. And so you're going to be in that same situation, I think, is what the caller is pointing out, if they dump the rent control. And are they going to do that? You were at city council the last 2 weeks. What does it look like? Where are we at on that?
Well, the majority of the people in Santa Cruz do live in dwellings, you know, whether it's, like you say, 9 or 10 students crammed into a garage apartment, or Mr. and Mrs. Silicon Valley living in their townhouse up there on Western Drive. And for sure, it's hard to sympathize with the mobile home park, you know, when you're out there shelling out $2,000 or $3,000 a month for rent. And here we are.
I disagree with you there, Jeff. I think a lot of us sympathize and just wish that we could do what you've done. And I keep hoping that people like the caller and others, all of us, can get together and form one big union in terms of at least residents, and recognizing that there's a lot, in essence, a lot of this rent is theft. You know, we're letting these folks, essentially, who, you know, aren't doing anything to improve their properties necessarily, just increase their profits. And I mean, that I'm not saying that every landowner or any every house owner here, every apartment owner, every landlord in Santa Cruz does this, But what are the chances for a common coalition here? Have you seen that? Have you seen more resentment or more sentiment for coalition?
I guess there's a sentiment for coalition, at least starting in the mobile home park. But I mean, I'm sure we would be more. You know, we have a association, you know, and we could daisy chain off into a union, so to speak. You know, whether it's renters or that sort of thing. I feel being in a mobile home park, we're really renters because we don't own the land. We're actually just we're paying a lease on the land, and we buy the coaches, and we're allowed to have them on there. And they're basically, it's under the same rules as like a condominium.
Now, Tenants Rights Union of Santa Cruz has been looking for rent control and just eviction ordinances for years. That's run by Donna Dice. And for those who are interested in TRUSC, T-R-U-S-C-S-C, Tenants Rights Union of Santa Cruz, TRUSC, you give a call to 426-0644, and you might want to express concerns about if you're having some problems with your own landlord, or if you want to be of assistance in helping others who are, or if you want to form some kind of a group that supports the Clearview Court and the De Anza Trailer Park folks, I should say residential park folks, who are trying to stop the gutting of rent control by the city. Now, I've also heard it said that, and this was discussed last night, two nights ago at council meeting, that they're not, that there's more at stake here than simply the gutting of rent control because the owner wants to build fancy condominiums and or townhouses and something else? There's another structure he wants to build, both townhouses and something.
Well, actually, it's the Lynch House. It's a historical mansion, you know, and they want to upgrade it, and the community's all for that.
Right.
And it would be a more of a tax base if you could get 9 condos on them, and we're not against that. But being in the mobile home park, if they're gonna not sell us the if we're not gonna be able to purchase it, and they buy it,
so that was the issue at City Council.
Yeah.
I'm trying to be clear about what the issue was. I know for De Anza, it seems according to the paper, the issue is the gutting of rent control, because the cities are afraid they're being sued by these landlord associations that have been successful in some jurisdictions like Hawaii, but not in others. For you, what is it you were looking for from the City Council in these last 2 weeks?
Well, we were looking, like you say, we're really ready to abandon rent control because the writing's on the wall. The city's saying they shelled out $200,000, and really, where are they getting the money to do that? You know, what are they getting the money to fight this? I mean, I can sympathize with that, you know, and you got all these corporations coming in here and dumping